You're listening to Monday Morning Live, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League.
And welcome to another edition of Monday Morning Live. I'm Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League. And this, you have found Monday Morning Live, the Facebook live stream, and also Monday Morning Live, the podcast.
Wait, this is live?
It's live. The podcast is not live. If you're listening to the podcast, it's taped. But if you're listening to the watching us on Facebook, it's happening now, Chris.
Right now?
You're in the now.
Right now?
Yes. So once again, very happy to be joined by the always smart aleck, Chris Hackbarth. And then we got Harrison Richards. Welcome back.
Hello.
And Jennifer Rigtrink down at
Hi,
the end
Matt.
There. We got a bunch of different issues coming up, a lot of things going on. Just kind of kick right off. A couple of us, most of us, except for one person, is wearing white and gold today, or gold.
Gold?
Yeah, and your khakis are kind of gold, I guess.
I like my necklace.
To commemorate the women's suffrage movement, and today, actually, June 10th, 1919, is when the state of Michigan ratified the 19th Amendment to give women voting rights. We were one of the first three states to do so, along with Wisconsin and Illinois. There's a little controversy who was first. Wisconsin says they were first. Illinois says they were first. Michigan doesn't, they know they were on the same day, but it necessarily wasn't first. But anyways, so it's a pretty cool thing. To 100
who was
years.
Last?
What's that?
Harrison, who was last?
Who's last?
Are you picking on me?
Tennessee was last.
Tennessee was last. Yeah. They were last.
Well, they were the 36th state to finally
Correct.
Make it.
The final
law.
State.
So it was significant.
It had to work its way down. They didn't have, the internet back then.
So
take their time.
So we have a post about this on our website. The league is kind of going gold this week. You'll notice our logo, the Michigan Municipal League logo, is gold on our social media platforms as well as our home site, our homepage. MML.org, and we have a blog on there that has links to things that communities can do to honor the 100th anniversary. When Tennessee ratified, it was actually, I think it was the next year, April 1920 is when it finally got ratified. So really all the next year is going to be the 100th anniversary of this historic movement to finally give women the right to vote. And Harrison, you were telling me something a little interesting about this. I didn't really realize that while it gave women the right to vote, it was kind of still a little more difficult for African-American women to vote.
Yes, African-American women are actually specifically left out of this because women at the time did understand it was a lot easier to lobby for the introduction and inclusion of sex rather than for race and limit, their abilities to actually achieve voting. And so it wasn't really until the 1960s and on the work of lots of powerful, amazing African-American women that they were able to advocate for the right to vote then.
Right. So they were able to vote, but a lot of states did things that made it really difficult for them, I think.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, most of us are very familiar with poll taxes, literacy tests, and things that were pretty much impossible to solve and a lot of questions that average Americans wouldn't be able to answer. So disproportionately affecting people of color and limiting them from actually achieving that. So it wasn't until those barriers were made illegal and then we truly started to advocate for equality on behalf of all people that everyone
right and that was that, right? Kind of during the civil rights movement where they finally started
the Voting Rights Act
correcting some of these things that were going on. Well, that's crazy. That's only 40 years ago. I mean, it's ridiculous that I think that took all that time.
Yeah, and I mean, even still smart communities, we still see it today, just access to voting where it can. And so, legislation and proposals that we passed just recently have been really impactful to really make sure we're expanding that right to vote for all people and removing the barriers as they come up.
All right. Well, that's good. So I'm glad I appreciate you sharing that with us. So we're going to jump in a couple of the issues. Jen has an early meeting, so we're going to jump over to her a little bit. Some stuff happened recently with the marijuana issue. As our communities know, Michigan passed the recreational marijuana a couple of years ago, and now or medical marijuana a couple of years ago, and now we're into the recreational marijuana issue. Communities are having to make some decisions right now, and we have a webinar coming up that's going to kind of help them. So Jen,
we're anticipating this week that the emergency rules are going to be released.
And what are these emergency rules?
So they're just kind of the within the legislation, kind of detailing out some of the policy and parameters around how things are going to operate. A lot of it not really around zoning. So a lot of it has to do with inspections, quality controls when it comes to edibles, I think delivery service, things like that. We're not expecting a ton of difference between the recreational/adult use and the Michigan, the MMFLA, the emergency rules for medical. But yes, we're having a webinar June 27th, 10 a.m. Andrew Brisbow, the director of Marijuana Regulatory Agency. Hopefully I got that right, that new... That he will be with Chris Johnson and myself.
Chris Johnson, our general counsel, to talk to
members about the emergency rules, what's in them, how it affects communities, and then individuals will be able to ask questions during that webinar.
And really, you couldn't get a better resource than Andrew Brisbow, right?
Correct.
I mean, he's the guy that's in charge of this thing.
Correct.
So this is where you want to hear the answers from.
Yeah, and regardless of if the rules are released this week or not, communities need to be deciding what they're going to do sooner rather than later. They need to be having that conversation. Conversation locally of what makes the most sense for their
right.
community.
And isn't there a deadline coming up? Is it August or September or something? Or
so technically the deadline that the state has to be accepting applications by is December 6th.
Right.
But we're anticipating that that's going to be, they're going to be ready to do that sooner.
Ah. Okay.
So once the rules, the emergency rules are in place, I believe there's 90 days. For comment and to finalize those.
And are we still getting calls from communities? Are there still the are undecided on this issue?
Yes. Well, undecided and or waiting to see what the rules say. Oh. And so that time is going to be here soon.
Right. And I know a lot of the communities that maybe voted to opt out, it was kind of more of a wait and see vote.
Yes, a lot of them it was more of a, yes, just that wait and see what the rules are going to say and then proceed from there. Okay. Or they opted out while they are putting their zoning regulations in place.
Okay. Well, and they're still having conversations with their residents within the community, trying to figure out, you know, do we want these? How many do we want? Where do we want them? How do we want them to look? How do
right.
we want to integrate them?
Right.
And unfortunately, they have to do that before a license gets issued
right.
or you,
right.
you run into
so
all sorts of problems.
Once the state does begin accepting those applications, there's nothing stopping them from issuing a license if an applicant meets all the requirements, unless a community has opted out. That would be the only justification for them to deny that application.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So if communities know they do not want to have, again, and this is for those businesses,
right.
for the processors,
a dispensary,
growers.
A warehouse or whatever.
So within the recreational, they're called retailers.
Okay.
Provisioning centers.
I see.
So, you know, little details,
yeah.
vocabulary, but yes, it's those licensed operations,
okay.
Establishments. One act, they're called establishments, one they're not. So.
Hmm. And like we said before, I've been saying all along, you know, with medical, you could opt in, or otherwise you're automatically opted out. And the other way, it's reverse with recreational.
Correct.
You have to
take an affirmative action of opting out if you do not want to allow those recreational establishments in your community.
Can they change their mind later on?
Of course.
Yeah, they can. And that, and it's interesting because a lot of communities, I think, are wrestling. I mean, we know it passed pretty overwhelmingly across the state, so they might look at their voters and say, well, our voters passed this, but that doesn't necessarily mean they want those businesses.
Well, and I think it'd be hard to find a lot of voters who weren't voting for their own individual rights to recreational marijuana and really didn't look into that it also gave the choice of your community. You were giving your municipality the choice to opt in or opt out
yeah.
Necessarily. So, yes, they may have voted for that, but then they also voted to allow their community to decide if they had those recreational establishments within there. Boundaries.
All right. Well, good. Well, everybody, I hope that you go. I think the registration hasn't started quite yet, but it will be very soon to go to online registration. But you go to mml.org. We'll have a big post on our homepage once that becomes live, so you'll be able to find it. But again, that webinar is 10 a.m. June 27th. I believe there's a real minimal cost. I think it's like $25 a person. But again, you're getting access to the premier person who's knowledgeable of this issue, as well as our excellent staff, Jen and Chris. So it should be very informative for you. So moving along to the next thing, kind of a cool thing that we had happen to us. MERS and Epic MRA, Chris and Harrisana recently came out with their their latest survey results of who's kind of the best lobbying organizations for associations, right? Mm-hmm. And the League, for the second time in a row, they do it every other year. We were also selected in 2017. We were selected this year. This year we got third place as an organization as far as the percentage of votes that were cast. And Chris, congratulations to you. You for individual lobbyists, you got fourth. Tied for fourth, so that's pretty cool to be. I mean, there's a lot of associations out there. There's a lot of organizations doing great work. So to be part of that conversation is pretty. It's really a reflection on not just our staff, but really our membership, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things that struck me as well when we look at the effectiveness of the organization, I know we see it as staff, as the advocacy staff. But you know, time and again, we're called in, and the administration or legislative leaders are calling us into meetings and asking us to participate in those conversations on negotiations with new legislation or existing legislation, new proposals, new ideas. Our feedback is sought out, and that's a real something that I strive for in creating the team we've got. Really, to be at the table. For every issue that impacts our membership.
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at the others who were at the top of that list, you know, we're the only organization that doesn't have a political action committee that made it into the top three. So you know, that speaks volumes as well to the effectiveness of our members in being able to share their voice with their legislators and be that squeaky wheel, because right. that's just as important as the work that Harrisana, Jen, and John and I do here in Lansing. Mm-hmm. It's having our members call and talk to, go to those office hours, meet with their legislators anytime they can and talk about the issues that are important to
them. Yeah, and like you can talk about, you know, really our members, you know, help us tremendously. I mean, Jen's gone now, but we recently had an issue with the short-term rental bill, and we put a call out to members saying, come to Lansing, there's a hearing coming up, and we had the hearing packed. They had to open a second overflow room, mm-hmm. and we had one lawmaker tell us about what she said during that. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. She said that she'd taken more calls on this piece of legislation than she'd heard from residents on the Governor Whitmer's 45-cent gas tax increase.
Wow.
You know, and go back to lame duck and the conversation about the tree bill.
Yeah.
You know, we turned that piece of legislation, our members contacting, you know, over and over again, getting in touch with their legislators, that really turned the tide and moved it. So there was a majority of legislators who were actually opposed to that when it got into the House.
Yeah.
So that bill ended up failing. And that's, again, a testament to the power of our members' collective voice when they engage and interact.
Right.
Help that only helps us do our job.
Yeah, and Harrisana, you're fairly new to the organization. What was now that you're here, you have a different perspective, of course. But what was your kind of perspective of the League, and particularly the lobbying that we're doing, you know, before you joined us?
Oh, before, I mean, and I think Chris is very right. I think a lot of times, if you have a political action committee, it very much dominates your space. Mm. And I think that was something unique once I saw, especially when I came on the inside, of like how much there is member engagement, how much we're really propelled by what our members want and what they do, and I think it gives us a very unique passion and gives the team here a very unique passion in how they advocate, because it truly is for the best outcomes for everybody.
Right.
And for communities especially. And so that's been no different from being on the team now, and especially seeing how much our members really push us
right.
to go out and have those conversations. And we know we can do that because we definitely have their backing. I think it speaks a lot to the work that we're able to
right.
create and, you know, contribute to. And I think the team's very well deserving of the award. I'm just here cheering you on for this one.
Well,
but 2 years, we'll do it again.
Next time.
That'd be great.
Right, good. Well, another thing, Chris, not too long ago, you guys were up on Mackinac Island for the annual Mackinac Policy Conference. Mm-hmm. While that happened, they passed auto insurance, I guess, reform, if that's the right term for it. Tell us a little about that and kind of what the mood and the feeling was regarding this whole issue.
Well, you know, it was interesting. There has been a lot of... Prior to the policy conference, there was a lot up in the air. You had legislative leadership, the two Republican leaders in the House and the Senate, basically setting their priority vision out for an agenda, and you had the governor setting her policy priorities out, and they weren't the same. Mm.
Now so she was on roads, and they were on something else, maybe.
They were on no fault reform.
No fault.
And you know, this is no fault auto insurance has been a big issue in this state for decades.
Yeah,
it's been discussed year after year. Doesn't matter the who was in the governor's office, doesn't matter who was in leadership or in control, it has been an issue, especially when you talk out of Southeast Michigan, some of the excessive costs that were coming out of there and the detriment to residents and businesses moving in, you know, kind of that hidden tax on businesses and economic development in that area. So you had a lot of discussion, you had a lot of pushback, insurance industry, healthcare providers, you know, going at each other, and this has been deadlocked, as I mentioned, for decades. Yeah. And you had the two leaders come to the governor and basically say, we're going to tackle no fault, and that's our number one priority before we're going to talk about roads or the budget.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, each of them passed different proposals.
Yeah, because initially the governor was kind of against a couple of these, and she said, I'm not going to be supportive of that, and all of a sudden they're meeting on a Friday, which is unusual, and things are happening. Mm-hmm. What happened?
I mean, I think you saw the two chambers come together on different proposals, but both kind of making, you know, comprehensive reforms in the system, and they went to the governor and said, all right, you know, what are your concerns within what we've put out there? They, especially the House version, had a number of components that were a direct result of conversations with folks in the Detroit area and some of the concerns they had raised with some of the Democratic caucus, some of the issues that they had raised, whether you're talking this issue of redlining or high costs and making sure that there was some sort of rate rollback, guaranteed rate reduction in whatever was done. So a lot of those things, fraud reforms, so a lot of those things kind of started to come together. And I think that, you know, the governor's office, and certainly Mayor Duggan has made this a priority as well down for him. And
league and member, Detroit mayor.
And so you saw the governor and the leaders really kind of go off in a room and work over the course of probably a full week, and they came out, and as you mentioned, did a Friday session, a special Friday session, and ended up passing, and the governor signed it while they were on Mackinac all together.
And that was something they wanted to do. I think I felt like it was a good
photo opportunity.
They knew a lot of media were going to be there. Yeah, they were on the porch. It was nice photo.
Right. But that, you know, it was interesting as we were having conversations with legislators up on the island, and since then, the consistent theme, regardless of party and regardless of chamber, who we were talking to, was how much trust that they felt they gained for each other, that they could negotiate on something massive and could trust each other as they negotiated on something big like that. And I think that they all mentioned, you know, now that domino is out of the way, what's next? The governor laid out a marker. She said, I want roads by the end of June and the budget by the end of July. And, you know, I think you see, whereas there was a lot more discord before, I think you're seeing a lot more, all right, we've got to have a similar negotiation.
We have a template now to kind of follow.
And they know how to work with each other now, in theory. Mm-hmm. So I think that bodes well for not dragging the budget out until October, which would be nice. None of us want to see a government shutdown. And no one's threatened that. But like I said, it's been kind of lurking in the back of everyone's head. Can they get a deal put together and get a budget out so that schools and communities that have fiscal years that are beginning soon have some assurance of what their budget looks like?
Right. Interesting. So were you surprised that it all came down the way it did? Or
so in the last, you know, we've seen a number of things that I would call third rail issues. I've been working in the legislature for over 25 years.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of things that were, again, those third rail things, never thought they'd be touched, kind of fall. And this is one of those that, you know, As more and more of these things happen, I become less surprised that they're able to get something accomplished like this.
Well, that's good.
So it just takes, and so we talk about Proposal Ann Headley, municipal finance reform. You know, sometimes it just takes, it takes continuing to work on an issue over a period of time before you make headway on it.
Right. So are we actually going to see lower auto insurance rates, do you think? Or
I mean, there are components of the bill that require rolling back rates. Okay. What that looks like, they've got a year to get stuff put together. You know, an interesting component, you know, now something that, you know, we see with the Public Service Commission and utility rates, where the Public Service Commission and the Attorney General have an ability to step in and kind of say, is this rate filing appropriate or not? For the first time ever, the DIFS, the Department of Insurance and Financial Services, has authority to approve rates, which that'll be interesting to see, you know, with this current administration. They obviously have an interest in keeping an eye on rates going too high.
Right.
So we'll be very, very curious to see how that new power is utilized as insurance companies bring their rates forward. So like I said, this next year is going to be really interesting to see how they.
So they have a year to kind of figure it out. So we won't see any difference in our rates at all until at least a year. We're talking about
next winter.
So take a picture of your rates today and make sure. I think really
use your baseline. Yeah.
There's a lot of things that come into play if these bills. Like it could lower your rates. They could go down. But I think something else that opens us up a lot to lawsuits. Now you can choose the amount of coverage that you could have by different levels, and so we no longer have those unlimited benefits. And so you do run the risk that maybe if you, say, get in a catastrophic accident or cause a catastrophic accident, you may be opened up to more liability than you had before. And so that's some of the risk.
Yeah, I think it's looking at the nothing changed with the existing no-fault parameters, but you are allowed under this bill, you'll be allowed to choose different levels of coverage. So where do those, if you are in a catastrophic accident, where do those coverages come in? You know, for seniors, a lot of the conversation has been they have Medicare access. Mm-hmm. So seniors were paying for double insurance coverage, essentially under the current system.
Okay.
So you've got some different things that, again, we'll have to see how, where does Medicaid come into play? People's private insurance, you know, how does that enter into the conversation of coverage for anyone who is in a catastrophic accident? But the other side of this is, Michigan is the only state that had this. 49 other states, there are people in catastrophic accidents in 49 other states. And
it worked out.
They figured it out. So it's being done.
Yeah.
So it's something new for us, though.
Okay. Yeah,
we'll have
interesting.
To walk through it.
And a really big benefit, especially for our cities, is that more people will be inclined to register where they live. So especially in Southeast Michigan, you have a lot of young people who have flocked to Detroit and who are living there, but have their car insurance back in Oak Park or back in Lansing or where their parents live, so it's more affordable. And so this is something that, you know, will really impact how taxes will go. If you have more people claiming they live there and work there, that's more taxes and more revenue for our communities.
That's a good point.
And it is directly tied in with the road funding distribution as well, where vehicles are registered. You know, that plays a factor in money flowing back to those communities. And so if you've got registrations being done in out counties instead of where someone's living, that negatively impacts that community.
All right, I just got a note. That good morning, Corey. Back to you. Corey wished us a good morning, so I'm wishing Corey back a good morning. I didn't open up saying you can post questions. We're almost done here, but you can still post questions, and we do get back to you. We monitor the comments on there, so feel free to do that. Any other hot topics, things kind of happening right now, Chris, that we should talk about?
I mean, certainly we're continuing to work the budget. We're seeing the legislature, the House, as we talk about road funding, the House produced their version of a roads plan last week.
Yes, and we didn't really, what's our thoughts on that?
What is the right answer for this? As with everything, this is an opening play.
Okay.
This is a long process.
Yeah.
This is kind of an opening. This is the opening hand for the House.
Yeah.
There's a lot that you just kind of shake your head and go, you know, we talk about selling the Blue Water Bridge. You know, there's no long term. Fund source. There's no sustainable funding coming from selling off an asset. That's a one-time revenue stream. And then that asset's gone. So actually, we only have half of the bridge we can sell because the other half is Canada. So it's a very interesting conversation. There's some small airports that were talked about being sold off in some communities. So it's an interesting conversation. Big hits on transit. That's a concern for us. We've expressed our concerns.
We want an infrastructure package that includes some kind of funding for
comprehensive
transit.
Comprehensive
plan.
Right. Our transportation network really encompasses everything from pedestrians to bicyclists to transit to roads and airports and rail. Big hits on rail and Amtrak. You know, things that are important components of the whole network. We can't just focus on one piece.
Right. We did put out a statement basically saying that we want a comprehensive solution, and this isn't really it.
Right. Now, again, there's pieces of it where they're recognizing that we have to put more money into the system. That's a positive.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some different policy things that kind of flow out of the old Proposal 1 that we had supported that failed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's room to work within this and room to have conversations within this. You know, the Senate, you know, we're looking for something from them hopefully within the next week or two. And that will be, at that point, then we'll have all three parties with their opening play on the table. and then the negotiations will really be able to begin. So we're obviously having conversations with both chambers, both parties, the administration, expressing our members' concerns that we need more money in the system. It has to be long-term and sustainable. It has to be ongoing revenue. We do believe $2.5 billion is the right number, and it has to invest in local road networks.
Yeah.
And the whole transportation system.
Okay.
Short-term rentals is still out there.
Okay.
We're as part of a work group. We're meeting on that.
So they had that big hearing, and then they sent it back to kind of behind the scenes work.
Right. So there's a lot of conversations taking place. We're reaching out to our members and continuing to have conversations internally. Some alternate plans you can check out on our blog, Inside 208, on the league's webpage. Please make sure you subscribe to that if you haven't. It gives you regular updates to everything going on in Lansing as it happens, and we post there. So Jen has been keeping folks up to date on our blog and through her committee process, the league's internal committees, on what's going on with that.
Okay.
So those are the big things. Revenue sharing obviously is part of the budget. The House version, Governor came out with a 3% increase in statutory revenue sharing. The House did 2.3%. The Senate kept it flat at current year. So as we move through and find out what goes on with roads, then we'll find out what's going to happen with revenue sharing.
Okay. All right, good. Anything, Harrisana, that you've been tracking that we should mention in our last couple seconds here?
Last couple seconds. Well, I will say this, last week I had the awesome opportunity to go and attend the UP Summit in Escanaba.
But it was your first time across the bridge,
first time in the Upper Peninsula. It was amazingly beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful land. Wonderful people. Everyone was so nice, so great. We had a big conversation about roads, big issue for them up there.
Right.
We did a walking tour of Escanaba and looked at some of the developments there, and so it was really awesome to meet our members.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you going up. We had a good contingent up there. It was a good meeting. Weather was good.
Weather was good. We lucked out. I actually packed too warmly. I brought all long sleeve shirts, expecting it to be like 50 degrees. And we got there and it was like 79.
Oh, wow. It was warmer up there than it was down here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Well, good. Well, thank you. Thank you guys for joining us. And thanks for those following us or maybe watching this after the fact and also listening to us on the podcast. Again, I'm Matt Bach. Thank you, Harrisana. Thank you, Chris, for joining us on Monday Morning Live.
Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.